This is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
I would like to welcome three-time Web.com winner and former first-team All-American Peter Tomasulo to the Sub 70 podcast. Peter, I really appreciate you taking the time today to do the show. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
First off, it was really nice to meet you at the Rust-Oleum Championship outside of Chicago at Ivanhoe when you were in town for the Web.com tour event and taking the time to talk to Jay and myself. We watched a play with Spencer for about nine holes. Your game looked good. It looked solid. How's the current state of your game? In your opinion, what's kind of going on, and what are you sort of working on, if anything?
My game's been pretty good. I haven't been able to put my tournaments together very well. You know, I haven't played as well as I'd like to this season. I'm driving it really well. My putting feels good. If I had to pick anything, my iron play and wedges need to improve, but I've been grinding on them the last couple weeks and ready to get on the roll here.
I saw where you're at on the money list, and I know there's still plenty of time to get into that top 25. Is there sort of a game plan for the second half that you're going to sort of put into place to kind of to get where you want to be, which I'm sure is back on the PGA Tour? Is there going to be more events, less travel events? Sort of what's the game plan for the kind of final half here?
Yeah, I mean, I set a schedule pretty much from the get-go, and I try to stick to it whether I'm playing, you know, whether I've played poorly or well. I've been around a little bit longer now, and I feel like I know when I'm going to be burnt out or I know when I'm going to be excited to play. And, you know, I think a lot of people think, you know, you're just out here playing golf. It sounds like a pretty cush thing to do, but you're traveling around a lot. You're playing every day. You're walking 10 miles a day. It is a long grind, and you don't want, and with the travel, you don't want to burn yourself out mentally and partially physically too. But, you know, I don't play more than three or four in a row. Four is kind of my max, and so I kind of set my schedule from the beginning of the year, and that's what I do. And so I'll play the next three events and then take a week off and then play three more in a row.
You were talking about parts of your game, like, and I agree with you. I saw that you're playing well. When it's not fully coming together, as you've been doing this for quite a while at this point, is patience become easier, or is it harder to be patient knowing that you're that close and it's you're right there to try to play some really, really good golf? Does the patience, are you better with the patience as you've gotten to be more of an experienced touring professional, or is it still frustrating as ever when you know you're close but you're not quite there yet? How do you kind of deal with that?
I think patience is something that, well, I battle for sure, and I think, you know, pretty much everybody at every level battles it in a different way. You know, everybody's got goals that they're trying to attain, whether you're, you know, Jordan Spieth or Dustin Johnson, or whether you're in my shoes trying to get back on the PGA Tour. There's a fine line between, you know, trusting what you're doing and knowing you're on the right track and saying, and really looking at yourself and saying, look, I need to improve my iron play if I want to be a great player on the PGA Tour. And so you really have to pay attention and work on the things that you know need to work on, and then try to maintain confidence in what you are doing well already. So the as far as the patience aspect goes, I don't know if I'm getting better. I think I'm getting better in certain ways, but you know, I've got a family now. I've got I leave my family when I go on the road. I have a lot of different stresses. Financially, it's a lot more difficult being out here because I got a couple more mouths to feed. And so there's a lot more impatience in terms of getting back to the PGA Tour in that aspect, in terms of my sense of career and what I'm doing. But I feel like I'm growing as far as patience on the golf course. I'm not sure if I've verbalized that correctly, but on the course, I feel like I'm a much more patient player. But in terms of, I've got a huge sense of urgency to get back on the PGA Tour in my career.
No, that makes sense. And then, you know, like even at my amateur level, when you play really well, and I'm assuming it's the same for your level, when you're playing your best, it just sort of slows down. It just kind of comes to you, and you can't sort of force it. Have you noticed that when you've played your best golf, it just sort of felt like you didn't push hard. It just sort of, you saw each shot. It just kind of came to you, and that's sort of the spot you need to be where it's just all congruent. It's clear. You see it. And pushing doesn't necessarily make the score lower, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely. Another thing that, you know, I was just talking to my buddy about, I just drove up here. We drove from Springfield, Illinois, actually, and with Max Homa. And we had, you know, we had an 8-hour road trip talking about golf for 7.5 of the hours. And when you're playing well, even when you're playing well, bad stuff happens to you on the golf course. You hit one that goes in the trees, you know, you miss a short putt or whatever. That stuff just doesn't bother you as much when you're playing well because you've got this confidence that it's really not that big a deal because you got a lot of holes left. When you start having some impatience and pressing, you think you need to be perfect and everything magnifies and everything seems like a bigger deal than it is. And that's probably, I would say, in a lot of guys' shoes out here that are trying to get back to the PGA Tour if they've fallen back down to the Web.com Tour, I think that's probably the biggest challenge is you want to get back there so bad, you press so hard, and you're coming off some struggles if you got back down here, that you need to build that confidence back.
Are you a big stat guy at this point from when you started on your career? I know they have basically every stat you could ever come up with. Do you study those a lot and look at the statistics to see where you need to get better? Or do you just sort of know, hey, I need to work on this because I can just sort of tell I'm not on my fifth gear right now with it?
Yeah, well, they've got great stats on the PGA Tour. The stats on the Web.com Tour can be a little misleading. You know, it's greens hit, putts per round. You don't have strokes gained off the tee. You don't have strokes gained approach to green or strokes gained putting. So I think you can really pay attention to certain stats that do affect play. You know, those strokes gained putting and strokes gained off the tee and stuff on the PGA Tour, but you don't have as quality statistics out here on the Web.com Tour. And so statistics can be misleading. So I think out here on the Web.com Tour, there's you know what you need to improve on. I'm not making enough birdies, and I'm making too many mistakes, and it's mostly with my iron play. And I can narrow that down, and I can assess my own game pretty easily in that respect.
Yeah. Of when you're firing on all 8 cylinders versus not. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That you still have an inner sense of there's no surprises of where you're going to work on and what you're going to be trying to accomplish.
Yeah, when I get back on the PGA Tour, I'd like to, you know, I will assess my different statistics a little easier. You know, you got information out there where you go, okay, from 125 to 150 yards, I'm 130th on tour, and from 150 to 175, I'm 18th on tour. It's pretty clear what you need to work on.
Right.
But you don't have that kind of information out here.
You were talking riding with Max, you know, for an 8-hour road trip. Who's some of the other guys on the Web.com Tour that you're tight with and that just on a human level, you respect them as players, but you also really like hanging out with them?
There's a bunch of good guys out here. Like this week we're up in upstate New York and we got, there's a resort here, but we also rented a house. So we've got like a 6-bedroom house. I'm here with Kevin Stadler, who's on coming back off a medical from the PGA Tour and he's doing some rehab starts. Spencer Levine, Nick Flanagan, Andres Gonzalez.
Oh my gosh, he's gotta be that's a good group. How Andres Gonzalez and Spencer Levine in the same house? Like I would pay great money just to sit there and just take that all in on an evening.
Andres could storm in the door at any moment and we could hear, you might hear
him
in the background.
So. Yeah, I mean, you know, he's like a character and a half on his own. That sounds like a fun frat house to hang out in for a few days. I would do that.
Yeah, it's going to be a good group. We're going to play a lot of cards and grill out some food, and we've got a good setup here. So that's a lot of the guys. There's a bunch of others. I hang out with Brock McKenzie a lot, and then there's some young guys that I've gotten to know a little bit who I think are great players, and they're going to as Kramer Hickok, he played well last week. There's a bunch of good guys. I'm 36 years old now, and I'm an older guy out here on the Web.com Tour, and there's, you know, I don't travel around with as many of the let's see how I can verbalize it. When you come out here and you're young, you got a big group of guys and you hang out a lot more. I've gotten a little older and like my alone time, I'm out here, and sometimes I like my time alone at the hotel and stuff like that, and just to put my feet up and relax. But a situation like this, we got six guys in the house, it should be a pretty fun week.
Yeah, and we really, like, we're kind of like cultish fans of Spencer Levine on this podcast. We want him on because, like, he's such an interesting story from, like, a golf fan's standpoint. Like, I'm, you know, trying to be objective, but he's interesting, right? He's an interesting guy. And, like, we watched him when you were playing with him.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. He seemed calm. He wasn't all fiery yelling at the golf ball, and he wasn't chain smoking cigarettes. I'm like, what happened to Spencer Levine? He's mellowed out into his 30s. So I would love to get him on some time to pick his brain.
I'll talk to him about it. He's one of my favorite guys I've ever been around. He's a fantastic guy. I think there's a little bit of a misconception about, like, I think there's certain people that think he's like an angry person because he's so animated on the golf course. He is a passionate guy, and he's one of my favorite people I've ever played golf with. He's funny. He's cool. He's a very interesting guy. He actually doesn't smoke cigarettes anymore. He's quit smoking cigarettes. He's just I can't say enough good things about him, and he gets a reputation for his fiery temper, but he is just a passionate competitor. He wants to kick your butt out there. And I love it. I love playing against him. I love playing with him. And yeah, it should be fun hanging out with him in the house this week.
So, and I think because I've been around the golf business for a long time, so I know a lot of the tour reps and stuff, right? So, like, I think you're hitting it on the head. Like, people don't think he's a jerk. I think people like, because he's supposed to be like everything I've ever heard, and this is why I like him. He's supposed to be like the greatest guy in the world, like, to hang with, right? Like, he's supposed to be like super quality human being. But he's an interesting cat on the golf course, right?
So it's that's funny.
That's why people like him.
I don't know anybody that knows him that does not like him. I can absolutely say that. I do not know one person that knows Spencer that doesn't like him. And I've had people go, "Whoa, who's that guy that was losing it on the golf course?" And I said, "You know, he's a passionate competitor. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, you want to harness that and not let it loose all the time. But that's a he's just competing out there, and you get him, and I love him on the course. He could lose it out there, and then you could walk up the fairway with him, and he's as cool as can be. He's just into it. He's competitive, and he's into it, and I just love the guy.
Yeah, and I think that's why people like him, because all of us have tried to, like, have lost our shit at this game, right, because you've gone crazy. And most touring pros, they don't, but, you know, every now and then he does, but he's supposed to be a great guy. So if he was like that and a jerk off the course, I don't think people would love him the way they like him. Like, he has a cult following, right? But because he's like the coolest dude ever, but he is animated. I think that's the line that people love, because we've all been just so, you know, apeshit crazy on the game that, and he actually will explode, but he's like a good dude. If he was not a good dude, I don't think people would dig him as much. That's the interesting part.
My older brother is, he's a year and a half older than me. He's my closest friend, and he comes out and caddies once a year. And so he's gotten to know Spencer, and we've gone to dinners with him. And my brother always tells me, Spencer's his favorite golfer. I'm number two. And I tease Spencer about that. And, he gets a kick out of him. He's just a great guy.
Yeah. Well, enough about him. Let's hopefully we can get him on sometime, cause I would love to have him on. We'll just talk about how you started playing golf. How did you kind of fall in love with the game, and where did you start playing growing up in California, and how did you sort of get interested in it?
Okay, so my dad was a member at a course called Virginia Country Club in Long Beach, and we lived close to the golf course. And so I'd go out there with my dad after work, play 1, 2, 3, and 9. They kind of wrapped around, and after work he'd take me out there and my brother, and we'd go play 1, 2, 3, and 9, and we got hooked. I was probably 10, 11, 12 years old, and then when I hit the summer when I was 12 or 13, I just got completely hooked, and I played every day I could. I'd walk over to the golf course, I'd ride my bike over to the golf course, and I'd just play all day. And I had my brother and another good buddy, and we just spent I played soccer at that time too. So if I wasn't playing, if I didn't have a soccer game or soccer practice, I was at the course morning till dark. And, as most people know, you get hooked on golf and you become an absolute fanatic. So I love it. I've always loved it, and I've been hooked on it ever since.
And then when you attended the University of California, how was that experience? How did you pick that university? And then obviously winning the 2004 NCAA National Championship really had to be a highlight to your college career.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a great memory, a great time. So when I was finishing up high school, like I said, I was playing a lot of soccer too. I wasn't a highly recruited player coming out of high school. I played a tournament with a guy that was a junior on the Cal golf team. His name's Han Lee. He's playing in Japan right now, and he was a junior on the team, and I played the tournament with him, and he relayed to the coach that he thought I might be under the radar and be a good guy to check out, and I got a call from the coach that fall, the fall of my senior year, and it's probably the pretty easiest recruiting trip call he ever made. He asked me if I was interested in Cal, and I said, you're the only one that's called me. If you can get me in the school, I'll sign up right now. And he said, what's your GPA? What's your SAT score? And I told him, and he said, we could get you in. And I said, send the paperwork, I'm in. And so I signed up. Had a very small scholarship to start college, and then I got a lot better as I went through college. I started, I think I was a honorable mention all Pac-10 my first year, and then first team all Pac-10 my second year. Third team All-American my junior year, and then first team All-American my senior year. So I really got better every year. And my senior year, we had a great team, bunch of really good guys, and we were able to beat UCLA and Kentucky in the finals. It's one of my favorite memories of my life.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you really got, the dream of kind of going pro became a reality with how good you got in college. Obviously, to be first team All-American, that's a lot of progress in a four-year period. And then to accomplish that's amazing. And then to get to play in the Palmer Cup, how cool was that experience to play against Europe? Had to be a huge honor as well.
Yeah, that was after my junior year, the Palmer Cup. We had at the U.S. versus Europe, and it was in Kiawa Island that year. It was my first time ever traveling to the South. It was a really cool experience. I went... We had a really good team. We got beat, unfortunately. We had a really, really good team, though. Bill Haas, Brant Snedeker, Ryan Moore, some other guys, and Dustin Bray, who was a good player. And we just had a great time. It was one of the coolest experiences as well, putting the shirt on with the flag, USA bag, and doing that. It was a very neat experience.
And then in 2004, you turned pro. What tours did you start playing right away once you turned pro? And was it Canadian Tour out of the gate, or did you mini tour it for a while? What was that sort of progress as you started out?
So I went to second stage. I got through first stage and I missed at second stage in the fall of 2004. So I didn't know what I was going to do. So I talked to I got a really good relationship with a TaylorMade rep in college. His name's Tim Hewitt. And he told me that Canadian Tour was the best way to go. You get four rounds of golf, you're competing with caddies, ropes, leaderboards. There's just, it feels a lot more like the tournaments that you're aspiring to at that point, rather than going to the, mini tours and carts with, without caddies. And so, I went up to Canada, I played really well out there, and the top three on the money list at that time would get into there were two web.com events in Canada and one PGA Tour event in Canada. And so if you're in the top three on the money list, you got into those events. And so I got into those, and that's how I eventually got my web.com tour card. I got into one of those and I won the Calgary Open, and which was a web.com event, and got my status out there.
And then you won on the Canadian Tour before that or after that as well? I'm assuming you won before that when you won the Montreal Open.
I won the Montreal Open, and that got me into the top three on the money list. And then from there, I was able to get into the web.com event, and it was about a month later, and I won that. And so then, I went from having no status to having web.com status in August of that year. And that was a pretty exciting time for me. Gosh, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, it's a hell of a way to start off your pro career, though, right? Because it's not that easy, even winning on the Canadian Tour. I mean, to come off with two major tours with two wins, I mean, that's a hell of a way to come out of the gate, and has to, obviously your confidence has to be extremely high at that juncture.
Yeah, I felt like this was going to be easier than it was, or than it has been. You know, I came out and I just felt like I won on the Canadian tour, I won on the web.com tour. I was just like, this progression was going to be smooth and easy, and I was just going to get out and have success right away. But as everybody knows, this game's pretty humbling. It can bring you down a little bit pretty quickly. And, you know, I've had a lot of battles. I've had a lot of successes. But, man, it's been a fun ride playing professional golf for a living.
And then you make it to the PGA Tour in 2009.
Yeah.
It has to be a dream come true. But what's that first year like? I mean, I've talked to a bunch of guys, you know, and you're kind of behind the eight ball as the new guy out there, because these guys have all played the golf courses 15 times. How is that first year of trying to transition to the PGA Tour off the web? What maybe surprised you the most, or is the most difficult part about that transition?
Gosh, it's hard. For me, the difficult part for me was just kind of battling this sense of like actually belonging out there. I've been a golf fan my whole life, or since I was 11, 12, 13 or whatever. And, you know, I get to that first tournament. My last name's Tomasulo. My locker's next to David Toms, and I was excited about meeting David Toms. Meet Jim Furyk or what? All these guys, Vijay Singh's out there, Tiger Woods is out there, Phil Mickelson's out there, and you're like, I'm excited to meet these guys. I didn't feel like I was, I don't know, maybe I was too excited and not ready enough to go, okay, I'm here to beat these guys, not to be a fan. And I didn't feel like a real sense of belonging out there. And so I got off to kind of a rough start. I missed a couple cuts early, and I just felt like, yes, you do feel behind the eight ball because you don't know what to expect. You don't know what the experiences are like, and you feel like you're competing against guys that are really good. And I lost a lot of confidence really quickly that I could compete at that level. And I should have had a lot of confidence. I had just played really well and proved myself the last few years, and I should have had a lot of confidence, but I lost it really quickly. And I was really surprised at how much of a battle that was. I was expecting it to be the absolute best year of my life. I was going to make a ton of money. It was going to be a great experience. I was going to hopefully contend to some tournaments that I've watched on TV my whole life. And it didn't go as well as I thought. And I got beat up pretty quickly. So, I think a lot of people don't really realize how quickly that happens to so many people.
Oh, I mean, from doing 35 episodes of this podcast, most of the, you know, the Jordan Spieths of the world, the Phil Mickelsons of the world, their ascension to the PGA Tour and winning and staying out there, that's the oddity.
It's so rare. Oh, and people go, man, you know, you could just putt like Jordan Spieth does. Like, you could just, you know, you could move up there so fast, and you go, well, no one does. It's hard. It's not that easy to do.
Yeah, I had Tom Pernice on, right? And he didn't play his best golf out there. He went out there, didn't make it, I think, twice, and then played his best golf from 40 to 52. He was exempt and won twice, right? That grind that, I mean, now you think of Tom Pernice as kind of like a household name. He's been doing it ever. But when I was kind of doing the background for the podcast, the amount of grinding and dedication and perseverance, you know, how do you not respect a guy like that? But it did not happen overnight, even though he's kind of like in the golf arena, he's a household name. But it took 20 years for him to be a household name. He played his best golf in his 40s. But it's that pathway of getting out there, not making it, getting better, coming back stronger, happens, from my research I've done, you know, way more common than, you know, when I had Kelk on, and he's just so good out of college, he gets his card at 20 and never looks back for 30 years. That's the odd.
It's rare. There's very few guys that do it. The majority of professional golfers, even I'd say the majority of guys out on the PGA Tour, have battled quite a bit, you know?
No doubt.
I look at a lot of the names up there. It's not as easy a path as, I don't know. I don't know if many people think it's an easy path, but it is a very difficult path to get out and maintain that level of play. You know, you have to be, you know, the PGA Tour is the best tour in the world. You basically have to be the top 125 golfer in the world to keep your card. That's a hard thing to do.
No, I think real golf fans understand it, and I think that's why, you know, they respect the guys on the Canadian tours and Latin American tours, and, you know, those guys can still really play. It's a very fine line, And it's, I don't think that people realize the hard work and the grinding that it takes to even get at the web.com level, let alone PGA Tour. There's a lot of perseverance. And what you guys do, I think a lot of people respect it because of the amount of time, effort, perseverance it takes to get there. It's, like I said, the five guys I could pull out of the air, you know, they're not the norm. The norm is the upward grind of it. There's always an interesting backstory to most of the people. Like I said, from talking to Pernice, it was fascinating how he and he plays best golf in his 40s, late 40s. He was playing some of the best golf. So that's the cool part about the game too, that, you know, you can still play some really damn good golf at 45, 46, 47, and still really compete out there. So it makes for an interesting story.
Yeah, I mean, you guys got guys out here that are 45, and you got guys that are 19 and 21, and
still competing,
right? Together. Yeah,
exactly. From the first year being out there, is there any good Phil Tiger VJ stories that you got to play with them or something like that? That was just kind of I know you're their peers at that point, but it was still kind of a cool story of, you know, what we would consider a mainstream of the PGA Tour, playing with a young guy who just got his card.
No, I didn't. I played so poorly. I didn't really get, you know, you're not paired with them on Thursday or Friday, and I didn't play well enough to ever get in a position to play with them on the weekend. So I don't, unfortunately, have any cool stories from that first year of, like, being out there and getting to cut it up with them. My first memory of playing a tournament that Tiger was in was at Torrey Pines, and I just remember going there, and I'm saying, look, it was early in the season, but I had had a couple instances early on where I got intimidated by the situation, I feel like, and I said, look, you're here to compete against these guys. You're not a fan. You're here to beat these guys. Let's go out there and try to do it, and I'm not going to care who's near me. I'm doing my business. And so I got out there in Torrey Pines, and I'm sitting there on the putting green, and I'm working on my drills that I do, and all of a sudden this just sea of people come. You can just feel it when Tiger's around, and like this sea of people come. I look behind me, and Tiger's putting at the hole behind me, and I just like kind of backed up, and I was sitting there for a second, and I just caught myself. I was just staring at him, like, and I looked around, and everybody on the putting green, whether they were PGA Tour veteran or a rookie, everybody was staring at him. He's just got this like aura about him that when as soon as he walks out, and maybe it's the 1,000 people that just showed up on the putting green, but it's a crazy feeling. I caught myself just staring at him. I go, okay, all right, regroup. You got to get into your zone and keep practicing. But it's the fan part of you. This guy's just an absolute legend. He's the best of all time, and you're a fan still, you know.
But like I said, that you kind of convince yourself, you've earned your way out there. You can compete against him, and you know, there's no reason you can't. You know, you have the skill set, and you're there.
Yeah, but it's just funny, the feeling of that. And I looked around the putting green, everybody's looking at him. It's just, he's a different breed.
A different animal, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just, no pun intended with the Tiger thing. But no, I mean, even I've been on tournaments and you see him, it's just, there's an aura, right? There's an aura of winning that many times, what, 79 and 14 majors will do, right? I mean, he's got that it thing, that's for sure.
That 80th is coming soon, I have a feeling too.
Yeah, he's trending the right way. You can tell. The one thing that's going to be interesting on sidebar on that is, can he put four together? It seems like he always has having this one round now that used to be a 68 that turns into a 72. But I like his golf swing right now. It looks more natural, less forced. I wouldn't be surprised if he winds up with a win by the end of the year. Personally, I think
I'd actually be surprised if he didn't. I think I wouldn't ever bet against that guy.
No, it's. Far as competitors go, and like, you don't forget how to win, right? I mean, once he's done it that many times, if he's in the hunt, that memory doesn't go away. Yeah. But speaking of winning again, so you go back on the web, and then in 2010, you win the Wayne Gretzky Classic. That has to be a huge confidence boost after a tough year on the PGA Tour.
Absolutely. I think when I think back on what I've done, that's my favorite memory in golf. Just because I went through this battle of being on the PGA Tour and going, having so much struggle. I was so down in my game, and I just, it's crazy to think, like, I went out on the PGA Tour and just got beat up emotionally, like, more, like, I had no confidence, and I had to go back to the web, and I just I wasn't happy about it, you know? And then as I got the year going, I started playing a lot better. And that's actually a tournament that my brother, I was talking about my brother earlier. He came out to caddy for me for that tournament. And we just had a blast the whole week. And I shot 61 in the last round. I birdied my last three holes to win by one over Keegan Bradley and Kevin Chappell. And it was just, it was so exciting, so fun. It was a great course, great location. It was just probably my best memory in golf. It was really fun.
And to go that low on a Sunday when you needed it, right? Like, how cool is that? Like, that's what everyone dreams of. Like, comes down the last four or five holes, and can you do it or can't you in doing it, especially beating like what those two guys have done in their career? I mean, it still has to be a great feeling to know that you can do it if need be.
Yeah, that was, like I said, Kevin had a, like a six or seven shot, maybe a six shot lead or five shot lead or something like that. And, I was just coming down the stretch and I knew I'd made a lot of birdies. And I looked at the board and I was close and it was just, it was a great, great memory. I hit a 7-iron in close on 16. I hit a 4-iron in close on 17, hit a wedge close on the last. It's just, man, it was a great memory.
When did your injury start to creep into your golf game? Was that around 2010, 2011, or when did you start fighting that a little bit?
It was actually at the end of that year. So that tournament was in July, and in September, I think it was, there were five tournaments left on the season. I was 11th on the money list, and we played a pickup basketball game in Chattanooga on a Tuesday night. And I broke my foot playing basketball. And so I had a fracture in my fifth metatarsal, which is like outside of my right foot. And so I was out for the rest of the season. And I was almost ended up missing getting my PGA Tour card there because I dropped so much in the last five tournaments of the season. But I've had to miss two or three tournaments every year since then. Due to injury, except for this year. This is actually the best I've ever felt since 2010. Seems like such a long time ago. Or was, I guess. And so I feel good now, but I've had some battles.
What other injuries have you had to deal with that, you know, besides a broken bone that sort of affected your game? And then how do they creep into maybe some bad swing habits, et cetera, et cetera? What else have you kind of fought down that pathway?
So I was actually just telling this story. I don't know. To Max on the way up because he didn't know about the story, but that at the end of that season I played we were coming down to the Tour Championship and I had dropped from 11th to 18th on the money list, and the Tour Championship I had to play because I could fall out of the money list and I could lose, not get my PGA Tour card, but I was in a boot. And so I called the tour and I asked if I could use a cart for 72 holes because you have to finish 72 holes for the money to be official. And they said, no, I couldn't. That's, you know, intentionally breaking the rules for 72 holes is illegal. You can't do that. And so I showed up there in a walking boot and was planning on playing. And the Titleist guys, the FootJoy guys, got me a sandal as opposed to actual golf shoes. So I taped up my foot like crazy before every round. They had a great physical therapist there helping us out. I taped up my foot, had a walking sandal, and walked with a cane for 72 holes.
And what did played, you shoot?
I was blown away. I shot 72 the first round and was like kind of middle of the pack.
Impressive.
And then I woke up the next day in more pain than I ever have been in my life. Like I just walked with a cane for 72 holes on a broken foot. And I shot 80 the next day. I finished 59th in the tournament because Chris Kirk didn't play the tournament. He didn't play a tournament of the 60-man field. But I had to do that to make my money in order to play. And so that injury ended up, I guess my point of the story was that injury ended up progressing or taking longer to heal than it should have, because I walked a 72-hole golf tournament with a broken foot.
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. But I get why you had to do it, right? I mean, what are you going to do? Not, you know,
I do it
60th
again.
Would give, right. Yeah,
I,
you have to.
I do it again. I ended up dropping because it's a big money purse. The last tournament, I ended up dropping from 18th to 23rd on the money list. And so I had to protect my chance to, you know, I had to get that guaranteed money so that I wouldn't fall to 26. If I move to 26, I'm back on the web.
Right.
And so I had to do it. It's kind of a crazy experience to look back on, but I'd do it again. Unfortunately, I think it caused some issues with my body. The next year I got a torn intercostal in my rib and had a stress fracture, and had to miss like 4 months. And then as soon as I came back, the next year, I had a bunch of hip pain at the Farmers Insurance Open in San Diego, and I had a torn labrum in my hip. So then I had to go to surgery and miss 6 months, with a hip surgery. And then I've just had some neck issues, a hernia surgery, shoulder. I got another torn labrum in my right hip. I've had a bunch of stuff that's gone on, but I feel really good now. And I don't know. I just need to get my game in shape because my body feels really good now.
And they say golfers aren't tough, huh? Holy cow, man! That's impressive to walk with a broken foot for 72 holes. I mean, you said you have to do it. That's a crazy story. You could have. Too bad you couldn't have hired like Sherpas or something like that to carry you from hole to hole. But I'm sure the tour wouldn't have allowed that one either. But yeah, you have to physically walk it, right? It's that or you're DQ'd.
Yeah, and I think if you hop in a cart, you get a 2-shot penalty, but you can't intentionally do that. Over and over again. I think, you know, you can't intentionally just break the rules for 72 holes. I would have shot 160 because I'd had a 2-shot penalty every hole, but I would have finished the tournament still.
So. Right. You got a great story of getting a card. Like, I don't know if there's anyone better than that of having to gimp on a broken foot to get on the PGA Tour. Like, I mean,
yeah,
you got that one forever.
I literally used a cane. I was going to use a golf club. My caddy said, "You've got to get a legitimate cane." So we went to a medical supply store on Wednesday afternoon and got a cane. And I was planning on playing in an Aircast boot and walking in that. And, yeah, I just ended up using a golf sandal with spikes on it.
Can you imagine the crazy average fan who's just like out there to drink some beers, having a good time, and this is the best 60 players out there? And this like guy looks fit, he looks young. What the hell is he doing out there with a cane? People must be like, "What the hell is going on?"
There wasn't like the social media presence there is now. So like I think literally no one at the tournament that was watching knew what was going on. They just, you know, they're out there watching golf, and some guy cruises by with a cane and one golf shoe and one sandal. They have no idea what's going on. I was swinging with my right heel up in the ground and just my toe touching the ground because I couldn't turn around my broken foot. So I was just barely putting my right foot on the ground and just leaning my left side and trying to just finish 72 holes from out.
Twitter would have blown up on that one. Like, you would have had the biggest following ever just to see like the tracker of what Tomasulo would have shot with a cane and a cast, right? Like, that would have been like the best free media ever for getting your name out there. Hell, I would have watched each round progressively of how it was going on. That's a great story, though, man.
Yeah, actually, I remember now. I beat one guy, and I beat Steve Pate. He was 49 years old, and he was heading to the Champions Tour. And after the tournament, I handed him the cane, and I told him to take it to the Champions Tour.
I bet you the volcano just loved that one, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine getting ready to go out there, and you get beat by a guy with a broken foot, and he gives you the cane? Well, welcome to the Champions Tour, old man. Oh, my God. That's even better.
I do remember doing that.
Of all people, Pete, right, who also is like a character and a half in the game of golf, right? People love him as well.
Another guy that we were talking about earlier, you know, the guy, he's got a temper. He's a really fierce competitor. He's got a temper, but what a cool guy he is. And like I said about Spencer, everybody loves him. I don't know anybody that doesn't like that guy.
I agree with you. I think he's like the same vibe as Spencer. Like, people love the volcano because we've all want, but like off the course, I know people who know him. I don't know him personally, but I've heard like he's the greatest dude ever. Like, people love him.
The first PGA Tour event I ever played in was at Pebble Beach, and on Sunday, I got paired with him, and he was cool as can be, but he just lost it on the second tee. And there's, you know, there's a big gallery around. I don't know if you've been to Pebble, where it just
it kind of
bottlenecks right around that second tee there. And man, he just lost it with some old people in the gallery. And I was just laughing, thinking, man, this is what I've heard about him.
The volcano has been lit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. People, like I said, people. I'll speak for myself. Robots aren't as fun to watch as people who like wear it on their sleeve sometimes, right? Like that's what's enduring about those guys. But that's a great story though of handing Pate the cane. That is freaking awesome. Get ready for the that's not a good confidence builder for the volcano to go on the Champions Tour. Hey Steve, how'd your week go? DFL, I got beat by a kid with a cast and a cane and he handed it to me. Like that's not how I probably would want to transition that in on the other side, but it's great.
He's
story.
Got thick enough skin and good enough career that he could handle a little ribbing by me.
Exactly. And then another victory, 2012, you're at it again. And my question is on the winning. Does it get easier as you've done it more often? Like by the time you won in 2012, does the feeling come back like, I've done this before. I know what my body does when I get in contention. I know what the adrenaline's going to do. I'm comfortable in this situation. Does winning breed winning?
I think it absolutely does. I think, like, you know, when you have an experience where you come down the stretch and everybody that you're playing with, everybody that's in contention is nervous, excited, the pressure feels like it's on you, and you do better than everybody else, that it can't help but give you confidence. There's no way it can't, really. And, you know, I think that's why you see when a guy like breaks through and wins, you see him have a lot of success after that. Just because it just can't help but breed confidence when you do that. And so, yeah, that one, that was a great tournament and a great course. Victoria National up in Evansville, Indiana. Really hard golf course. That was a really fun win.
Other question I have is kind of like looking at 15 years of playing professional golf. And in your 15 years of being a pro, how has the game of golf changed in your opinion? Have you had to make changes in your game as the equipment has changed? And do you like the direction of where professional golf is sort of going at this level? And the reason I ask this is that argument of it was more fun when the ball would spin more. And you kind of got out on tour right when that equipment, i.e. the Pro V1, was changing, where the ball didn't spin as much. But, you know, it's even say the 10 years, there's definitely a case where more power seems to be kind of winning that battle. What's just sort of your take on the 15 years you've been out there and which direction it's going and how is it, have you had to make changes in your game with it?
Yeah, so, it's crazy, it's been 15 years, but yeah, when I came out, I was, in terms of the direction the game's going, I was one of the longer guys out and one of the younger guys. So when I was 23, I got on the web.com tour, and there were probably less than 10 guys that were under 25 at that time that were on the web.com tour. The game was just a lot older than, at least at this level. There weren't a lot of young guys that came right out of college and onto the PGA Tour. I think there was no one in my class that did, and Bill Haas and Camilo Villegas were the got out after 1 year of playing web.com. And now the tour is so much younger. I mean, I think there's less than 20 guys that are over 35 now, and the majority are 27 and under out here. That's a huge way it's changed. I think that's great. I think it's healthy. I think it makes golf way more exciting and fun to watch when the guys are younger. I'm an older guy, and I can admit that it's more fun to watch when these guys are younger, and it's more exciting. And then also when I was young and I was 23, 24 years old, I was one of the longer guys on the web.com tour at that time. And then at this point, I'm actually longer than I was then. I'm longer right now at 36 years old than I was at 23, 24 years old, but I'm in the bottom half of length out here on the web.com tour. So the game is to progress to guys that are younger, more athletic, and hitting it a heck of a lot farther than they were back then. And I think it's great for the game. I think it's the evolution of the sport. Guys are getting more athletic. There's more technology to learn how to hit the ball farther and how to hit the ball more consistently further. And I think that's great for the game. And I don't think the technology needs to be rolled back. I just think all this stuff that's going on with golf is good for the game.
When I was out there, you know, I'm 6 foot tall, 185 pounds, not short, not huge. Some of these young kids, they look like lumberjacks. I mean, 6 foot five, 6 foot four, each one of their shoulders is like both of mine put together. You know, and I'm watching these guys hit these utility irons off the tee with rollout, 280, 290 yards, 275 all day. It's crazy to watch the speed in which and the size of some of these younger guys. They, you know, you, it looks like they could have played linebacker at D1 college, let alone golf. That's the part I notice that's changing.
Yeah, but the thing that's cool about golf is that if that guy's hitting it crooked, some guy that's my size that hits it even shorter than I do can beat him if he's got a good short game and he hits it straight and he keeps it in play and keeps it below the hole and has like it, the difficult part about hitting it that far is that it's harder to control. It's harder to control your distances on wedges. And so you've got to, in order to be great at golf, you've got to control all aspects of your game. It's great to be able to hit it far, but it makes certain aspects of the game a lot harder. It's a lot easier for Zach Johnson to hit a wedge close than it is for someone that hits it so far. And Dustin Johnson has proved that, like, once he gets his wedge game dialed in, he's the best player in the world, or Brooks Koepka. And you've got to control all aspects of your game or you're just not going to be able to beat everybody. And
right, then Brian Gay can still be competitive, right?
Hitting
285 or Zach Blair last week, right? I mean, those guys can wedge it and short iron it. That's what makes it interesting. But I've noticed a lot of these, a lot of the younger guys, not all of them, but there's a lot of them that were, I would say, bigger than, I'm 45 years old, than the previous kind of generations, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of, I think you're seeing the kind of Tiger effect final, like, really coming into play, where guys that are just more athletic guys are interested in golf and playing golf at a young age, made the sport a lot cooler and a little less stuffy, I guess. And so these guys grow up liking golf, being fans of golf, and they're big athletic guys. And if these big, strong athletic guys that hit it a mile can control their short irons, they're going to be amazing at golf. And that's what you're seeing.
There's your Dustin Johnson scenario, right?
Yeah.
Don't play,
exactly.
Go away from the hook, play the fade. And if you can play from 125 or 150 and in and putt it well, then it's a deadly combo.
Yeah.
Last questions I have, they're just sort of rapid fire, whatever kind of comes to your mind. So we'll finish up with this, and I think I've got some good ones here. So guys on the PGA Tour or Web.com Tour, or even Champions Tour, doesn't matter, dream foursome. You're going to pick three other golfers. You're going to go out and play a money game, dinner and drinks that night. Who you bring in, and what do you like most about these three guys?
Okay, well, two of my closest friends from Long Beach, John Malinger and John Merrick, would be my first two picks for sure. They're two of my closest friends, and they're fun to go out and have drinks with, both of them. And then for the third, oh man, that's a tough call. Colt Knost, he always brings a good time.
Yeah, I had him on the podcast. He seems like a great dude. Like, you could totally hang with him.
And he is fun. And he's fun to gamble with, too. That guy really likes to gamble. And there's probably not many more people I would enjoy taking money off more than him. But I also stings to give it to him. So it's that would make for a fun group.
Well, this kind of falls into my next one. Do you like to play, or is there any good stories, I should say, on Tuesday games or anything like that with other touring pros for cash? And has there ever been a great story or one that stands out that got kind of crazy maybe on the betting or the outcome of it?
No, I can't think of any right off the bat that really stand out. But I like to play on Tuesdays. Sometimes the practice rounds, especially if you've seen the course a lot, can get a little monotonous. So guys like to play money games. Like, we're going to have a money game tomorrow out there at this at the practice round for this web.com event with the guys in the house. And unfortunately, I don't have any great stories about the crazy money exchange in hand, but we always like to gamble on anything. It could be, you know, we're going to gamble on the soccer game this afternoon or the baseball game. Golfers love to gamble. Our whole life is a gamble. We're trying to play golf for a living. So it's most of the guys like to gamble.
Best golf shot you ever hit under pressure?
At the Victoria National Golf Tournament 2012, the United Leasing Championship, I hit a 9-iron close on the last hole to force a playoff. I hit one to about 10 feet on a really tough hole location by water. That's probably the best shot I've hit under pressure.
Most interesting people you've ever gotten to meet, not necessarily golfers, but because of you being a professional and of, you know, in the game of golf, so two or three people that stand out that you got to meet them because of what you do for a living?
I'd say Aaron Rodgers and Charles Barkley would be the two biggest names and just awesome people to get to know, to meet, to stay in touch with. It's just those two guys, hands down, coolest, most interesting people that I've gotten to know.
At your home golf club, do you keep a handicap? And if so, what is your handicap?
I don't, but we usually play the plus five. So if a guy, you know, one of the guys that I play with at home the most, he's a two handicap, and I give him, wow, now that I think about it, I'm getting away with this. I give him three shots aside. So I should give him one more, I guess, but we won't tell him about that.
Nah, I think plus five is a, yeah.
Plus
I think
four.
You guys are normally, I think you guys are normally
guys
around
plus
six,
four,
right?
Plus five. I mean, somewhere in there. We're negotiators. Like I said, we like to gamble. So you want to be on the right side. We try to negotiate as well as we can.
Yeah, I don't rank that bet against the two if I'm the two, right? I think you're going to have to give me a few more here, pro, because I'm not quite buying the plus four here. Plus six seems more on the up
this is
and
the
up.
Way
but, hey, if he's going to give it to you.
Every first he goes. That's the way every first he goes. You gotta assess your ego versus trying to win the bet. So,
I am about the bet with no ego, so I would be demanding more. You guys are too good.
Me too. It's negotiation.
Best three or four golf courses in the world architecturally. This is the last one here. And what makes those courses so great in your opinion?
Pebble Beach, for me, number one, hands down. Just everything about it. I think the design of the course is actually underrated. Like, a lot of people don't like it. I don't know why it seems absurd to me that someone could not like that place. I think that's, and then the views and everything, that's hands down to me the best course I've ever played. And then the other ones, actually Max and I just played Muirfield Village on the way up from Springfield to New York. And that would just jumped into the top five for me. I'd say Riviera and Robert Trent Jones Golf Course in Virginia. Those would be my favorites. I love all those courses have par fives that, or drivable par fours that make exciting holes and scoreable holes. And then they also have really, really tough holes. I think a good design golf course has all that. I like a short par four on a good golf course. I like par fives that have some risk and reward and are, you have a chance to make a three, but you could also make some trouble. And then some really tough par fours where you have to hit two solid good shots to have a birdie putt.
That sums up Pebble Beach, doesn't it? I mean, it kind of does.
Yeah, and I think every one of those courses, and then I also put Quail Hollow in there. I think those are my top five that I've played, and all those courses have all that. The best one on the web.com tour is Victoria National in Evansville, Indiana, and that for sure has all those exciting, tough par fours, some short par fours, and then also some reachable with trouble par fives.
Do you like Pebble more than Cypress Point?
I do.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I like the golf course more.
I'm stubborn on that. I like arguing it too.
Yeah, Cypress has just some of the, like, you know, like 15 is a cool little par three. I think overall golf course, I enjoy playing Pebble more. Cypress has some of the coolest holes you've ever seen. I mean, lucky I played it once. But if I had to like pick to play each course every day, I would take Pebble. If someone said, here's your country club, go play it. I love Pebble.
I don't mean that in a demeaning manner to Cypress Point by any means. It's an amazing, amazing golf course. But it's just, I feel that strongly that Pebble is my favorite place that I've ever played golf. And the feeling you get on Cypress, I don't know if there's a feeling like that on any other course I've played. You feel like you're not supposed to be out there when you're out there, like that you snuck out there or something, because you just feel, it feels special, and it feels pretty exclusive, you know, very exclusive when you're out there. But
it's as good as it gets from that standpoint.
But Pebble's just nothing like it.
Well, I can't thank you enough for the conversation. I've truly enjoyed it. Best of luck this week and the rest of the year on the web. And then when you get back to the PGA Tour, because it will happen, hopefully we can talk to you again when you get your first victory out there, and it'd be a great recap conversation of that journey you're sort of on. So best of luck with everything.
I would love that. Thanks for having me, Jason. I had a good time.